You are listening to the Apex Hour, hosted by Ryan Paul on KSUU Thunder 91.1. This show allows more personal time with our guests, allowing them to give us their stories and opinions. We will also give you new music to listen to, hoping you enjoy some new sounds and genres. Welcome to this episode of the Apex Hour.
Welcome to the Apex Radio Hour. I'm producer Faith Christensen. I'm joined with Apex Director and Professor of History, Ryan Paul, and our special guest, Shauna Mandini. I'm turning it over to you, Ryan.
Thank you, Faith. Grateful to have you here. We're here with Dean Shauna Mandini, who is the Dean of the College of Performing and Visual Arts and has been the Dean for over a decade. Is that right?
14 years in the role as Dean.
And from what I understand, you are retiring soon.
I am into that new world of adventure. What retirement means, I don't know quite yet, but I guess I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be great.
Yeah, June 30th, last day.
Well, we appreciate your service and your storied career here at SUU, and we'll talk a lot about that. But one of the questions I like to start with is kind of a how we get to now question. So first of all, let me just say this, that, and correct me if I'm wrong, the College of Performing and Visual Arts here at SUU covers the filmmaking, art, and design department, the music department, and the theater, dance, and now arts administration department. Is that correct?
Correct. We have three departments.
And then you also work with other entities on campus that are tied to the arts but not under your purview. Is that correct?
Well, the Southern Utah Museum of Art, SUMA, just a few months ago, connected their mission strongly with the academic unit of the institution, and they are now under the college.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
That's great. And you're excited. Tangentially connected to the Utah Shakespeare Festival and other, the Ballroom Dance Company,
yes,
right?
Yes, are all under us. And, well, the Utah Shakespeare Festival, we coordinate very closely with and have an outstanding relationship. I've served on the board for all the years that I've been a dean on the board of governors for the Utah Shakespeare Festival and work closely with their administration.
So let's go back to this how we get to now question. And first of all, tell us where you're from and how you kind of end up here at SUU.
Okay. You know, I'm a Utah kid. I'm Utah. I grew up in Salt Lake and had just a wonderful, wonderful childhood. I am a first-generation student before we knew what first generations were. And so getting into higher education, I got a scholarship to Utah State University, and I headed up there. They had a wonderful program back then, Sterling Scholars. They still have it, and I had my opportunities to go to college. And I kind of fell in love with higher education.
And you went to college to study?
Well, originally art, visual art. And I had also, I've always been a jack of all the arts. And I love dance as well. And I chose to go into art because of the scholarship. And then I met some wonderful people while I was at Utah State and decided to try to double major. And that was a little hard. So I made a choice to go to dance.
So I'm interested, when you were a kid, what's the first thing you remember wanting to do? I want to be this when I grow up.
You know, this was before Title IX, okay? Had I not gone into dance, I would have wanted to be an athlete, I think.
Really?
Yeah. I had a brother, I was a tomboy. I think that's when I ended up in dance. But I had a little brother that I would prepare him to be a pitcher, and so I was his catcher, and I was the quarterback of the football team and in our neighborhood, and I would have probably loved softball.
Yeah.
And be involved in women's athletics. Love it today. Love sports.
Well, I guess that I'm glad that Title IX is here, but if it, you know, I'm glad that you're where you are and did what you did. So what was the encouragement to become an artist first, right? You said visual art. Is that painting? And is there wanted to do?
Yeah.
So when did you decide that's what you want to do? And were your parents happy about that?
Well, you know, it's a gravitation of what we all come to realize what we want to do for our future. You just find those things that you're kind of good at. and you just find a way to continue to hone in on them. And that's the way I've been with the arts. And so it really, I don't know that it was my choice as it chose me. And my parents, you know, I had the most amazing father, most brilliant man in the world, but he was a Swedish immigrant and came here as a young child, learned the language faster than anyone in his family. And so he had a ninth grade education, as high as he was able to go. So when we were able to go on and I had a scholarship to college, he was just so proud of anything I wanted to accomplish. And so I never got any friction. But I listened to our students when they have to many times justify their same passion for the arts and when it calls them, and finding ways for them to find their pathway to success, because we still need to make a living, we still need to work, but it's very important that students today find that same level of support that I had.
Yeah, I want to talk about your journey, you know, how you get to SUU, but let's talk about that in a second. And let's talk about when you arrive, so you go to school at Utah State, mm-hmm. and lots of things happen there, right? Mm-hmm. We'll talk about your dance career there, and that leads to really an amazing experiences, mm-hmm. right? So when you come to SUU, what do you come as? Like, what are you hired to do first originally?
Okay. I had, prior to that, just for a little bit, I was at New Mexico State University, and both my husband and I came from Utah State, New Mexico State. But we were hired here as an assistant professor of dance. And it was the first tenure track position in dance at Southern Utah University. And it was in the Department of Theater. And it was, the goal, I felt, was to establish a dance major and develop it from that point.
And this would have been the early 90s?
This was 1993, yes.
So it's interesting that we, you know, as you and I have talked and for many years, I guess, that we've known each other, that we think about SUU associated with the arts specifically. We have this great legacy of painting and visual art. Mm-hmm. But more specifically, I think more people know us for the Utah Shakespeare Festival and theater, right? Which mm-hmm. is in many ways connected, but a little bit separate mm-hmm. To the department or to the college. And we have this idea that SUU had always been about Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. But of course, we know that until Fred Adams shows up, we only do it, what, three times in the mm-hmm. whole history of the university. So what is the status of the arts, the College of Performing and Visual Arts, if it was called that, when you get here?
It wasn't. It was actually the College of Humanities Arts, kind of thrown in the middle, and social science. And it stayed that until probably a good 5 or 6 years of my being here on campus. And then it changed with Dean Metten as the first dean of the
Charles
College.
Chuck Metten,
College of Performing and Visual Arts from that point.
And so so dance becomes an integral part of that mm-hmm. as more than just kind of a link to movement for actors and that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yes, it was an emphasis under theater, but it did have its own curriculum beginning, technique levels. It wasn't strictly for movement for actors. It had some solid technical balance as well.
And art was still tied into that, or was it still separate?
It was separate. Mm-hmm.
And then Chuck Metten kind of unites all of these things mm-hmm. together in mm-hmm. this broader College. Program. So you then teach in that program for a few years mm-hmm. until you are asked to be the interim dean, right?
Well, I was chair of theater arts and dance for a good 6 years as well in that middle.
And then you take over. So I guess one of my questions is, before again we get back to the middle part of the story mm-hmm. as we move from the beginning to the end,
yeah.
is when you take over, what are the initiatives that are going to come up? I mean, what growth have you seen from then to now, from this period as your deanship in the university?
Yeah, it's really been a journey and a wonderful one. My first experience and public presentation for the college was to announce SUMA, Southern Utah Museum of Art. It was a long journey to get us SUMA because it had to be 100% privately raised.
And we should say that the art gallery, the Braithwaite Gallery, was in the basement of of the Braithwaite building and very small. And so it really is an ambitious thing that you're doing to build a structure to house this collection.
Exactly. And it came up the same time as the Center for the Arts that was eventually titled and named the Beverly Center for the Arts. It was part of the Utah Shakespeare Festival where they were settled. Now, we were planning on having SUMA across the street, diagonal, but there were some challenges with this, and we decided to have it all within the same closer proximity of the Center of the Arts there.
So SUMA grows. You have... I would imagine an expansion in many of these other departments, right, to include more things.
And exactly. We started to embrace, even at the graduate level, not at the undergraduate, but the graduate level, online learning in the arts. We have more online programs in the arts than any other institution in the state, and that began with our Master of Arts in Arts Administration. We already had our MFA in place, and that allowed greater access for that program. So it started growing. Then we, were able to establish that. Then we had the music department, and, you know, we've just within the last few years established a film program, you know, that has been growing. And we've established a wonderful, wonderful programs in music technology that is across the nation, and that is really one of our true national-facing programs. I have graduates from Nashville, from Florida, all over the country studying in that.
And commercial music as well, right?
Yeah, we've established commercial music.
I think it's interesting to see how this has evolved over time, because in my perception, you know, arts can be very solitary, but also very interactive and groupish, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But I think it's interesting that part of the founding of SUMA and other things were tied into this graduate program, which was an early graduate program at the university, right?
Yeah, it was
one of the first, wasn't it? The MFA, which brought students here to actually hands-on work in these organizations.
Exactly.
And then, as you say, it's also one of the early ones, correct me if I'm wrong, to embrace the online community of just arts administration, right? Mm-hmm. And open up this broader connection to people in that way, which really is also more about nonprofit management as well. Is
Absolutely.
That correct?
Absolutely.
So we're going to go to our first break here in a minute, but I want to kind of tease this a little bit of what comes next, because you grow up, you decide to become an artist in whatever way, end up at Utah State, where you interact with someone who really is an incredibly powerful and important person that not a lot of people know about.
True.
Right? Birchman.
Birchman.
Mm-hmm. And Birchman is it fair to say, going to change how you see things?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I saw the world in a different lens after meeting Birch. The worst thing you ever wanted to do if you were around Birch was to be ordinary. She required her dancers to really push the limits. And Birch was an amazing, amazing lady. Yes.
And she was brought to Utah State by another visionary, I guess you could say.
Of course.
I mean, some people would call him that, and that would be
Gerald R. Sherratt.
Jerry Sherratt, who would become the president of SUU.
You know, we've got a library over there, Sherratt Library.
Yeah, Sherratt Library, and eventually also the mayor of
Cedar City,
right?
Yeah.
It's interesting how all of these kind of the Venn diagram kind of fits together.
Yeah.
And it's not often that you meet someone who really has such a powerful impact upon your life. At least that's how I would see it. And so let's take our first break, and then let's come back and talk about Birchman a little more, and how she interacts with you and with the rest of the world and with Cedar City as well. So as those of you who listen to us know, we ask our guests to give us a list of songs that we can choose from to play during our breaks. And the one I want to start with is one that I am very familiar with for a variety of reasons, and I'm glad you chose it. It's from an artist who most everyone knows, Billy Joel, very prolific. And this is probably one of his most iconic songs, mm-hmm. Piano Man. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me why you chose this particular song?
Okay, we're talking Meeting My Husband, that we're about to celebrate our 46th wedding anniversary. This was way back in mid-70s. And I met him up at Utah State. And when we would see Billy Joel, it wasn't in big arenas. It was when he was beginning his career. And we have been fans of his from the very beginning. So Piano Man was one of the first songs that I fell in love with when he performed live and interacted with us as audience members, really close to him as he performed. So that's the reason.
All right. And I encourage you all to sing along with a chorus. You all know. This is Billy Joel and Piano Man.
Saturday, a regular crowd shuffles in. There's an old man sitting next to me, making love to his tonic and gin. Sure how it goes, but it's sad and it's sweet, and I knew it complete when I wore a younger man's clothes. La 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 la. Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Sing us a song. Well, we're all in the mood for a melody, and you've got us feeling all right. Now John at the bar is a friend of mine. Gets me my drinks for free, and he's quick with a joke or to light up your smoke, but there's some place that he'd rather be. He says, Bill, I believe this is killing me, as a smile ran away from his face. Well, I'm sure that I could be a movie star if I could get out of this place. Had time for a wife, and he's talking with David, who's still in the Navy and probably will be for life. And the waitress is practicing politics as the businessmen slowly get stoned. Yes, they're sharing a drink they call loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone.
Saturday, and the manager gives me a smile, 'cause he knows that it's me they've been coming to see, to forget about life for a while. And the piano, it sounds like a carnival, and the microphone smells like a beer, and they sit at the bar and put bread in my jar.
That was Piano Mind. Oh my goodness, sorry. That was Piano Man by Billy Joel. You are listening to the Apex Radio Hour here on KSUU Thunder 91.1. I'll turn it back to you, Ryan.
Thank you, Faith. You know, I actually saw Billy Joel in concert. I think we were talking about that. It's very memorable for me for a variety of reasons. So we're here with Dr. Shauna Mandini, the Dean of the College of Performing and Visual Arts here at SUU. And we were talking about your experience graduating, going up to Utah State, and I want to talk about someone who is a force of nature, and it's Birch Mann. So why don't you start with who Birch Mann was, and then how you met her for the first time.
Okay. Yeah. Birch Mann grew up in Texas and Oklahoma, and she always had a desire to make a world of dance. But wanted to create dance that she could take back to the Texans and the Oklahomans and make sure that they are loving what they're seeing and be able to relate to. So she went off to New York with her brother, Mike Mann, and they studied. They studied with the great Russian artist that brought in Michael Fokine and got her training there. And then went back to Los Angeles, and really that's where her career began and really started to get a background from Los Angeles. She was hired by Walt Disney and was the choreographer for the first year of a group called the Mouseketeers. I don't know if all of your listeners know who they were, but it was a big deal. And that first year, she did the choreography, and it was the first time that they had Annette Funicello and all of the Mouseketeers. And the choreography was pretty complicated if Birch was doing it. And they had these headpieces on that kept flying around and that were just completely out of control. And Birch told Walt Disney, he says, you know, if I just had a little cap, just a little round cap with two ears on the top.
Wow.
Two little ears on the top, and they could still dance and move, then that's what I need to have. So she worked with a costumer. They designed this little cap with two ears on it.
So Birch Mann is the impetus behind the mouse
ears.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. She is. She is. Now, you know, she didn't get any royalties for that. She was working for Disney, but, yeah, she talked them into a different look.
Form and function. Can I ask a technical question about this? So Birch Mann and her brother go to New York to train as dancers. Mm-hmm. And I would assume, not being one myself, that the dancing and choreography, a choreographer, they're similar skill sets, but they're not exactly the same. So how does one, and how does Birch transition? I mean, how do you become a choreographer instead of just a regular dancer? Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think she was first a choreographer, and she gravitated that instantaneously. Michael, her brother, actually ended up in Fokine's company. But Birch was really into learning the whole scene of what was happening in New York. She was going down into Harlem and learning the tap from the source, you know, the where she had to actually knock on the doors in code to get into different buildings to be able to study with these masters in tap dance. She went into the El Marconite nightclubs, and she did choreography and really made her world in a real commercial sense. And so she was first and foremost a choreographer.
So she's drawing from all of these sources and then creating something original of her own from all of these influences.
Exactly.
Teaches the Musketeers how to dance, changes the world of popular culture in more ways than one. And then what happens?
Okay. She decided she wanted to start her own company. And at that point, it was called the Birchman Dancers. And they performed all over the country. I don't know if your listeners would even know who Ed Sullivan was, but they performed on Ed Sullivan many, many times. And they performed on the Strip in Las Vegas. They performed at the Frontier. That's no longer there, but it was the Frontier. And one of the comedians once said that one of her costumes that she'd have for the folk ballet, or at that time Birchman Dancers, could clothe the entire line at the dunes, of dancers at the dunes, because we were, you know, that she was in folk and they didn't wear much at that time. So anyway, she was even on the Strip performing with a company.
So a company, is there a number of dancers that, to be a company, how many dancers do you need?
See, that's part of the problem with why the company hasn't continued for years and years. It takes 16 minimum for her company. You know, to really tour and do things even today, you wouldn't think of it beyond 8 dancers.
Really? Mm-hmm. So she's not only choreographing the thing, she's booking venues and being an agent as well.
Exactly.
For these people, these individuals. And are they evenly matched between men and women?
Or? Yeah, they're exactly. We're maybe a couple more women, but we have a strong group of men.
And was there a style that, like, could you see Birchman's choreography and say, oh, yeah, that's Birchman?
Yeah, because it's told a story. Her work was it was eclectic, drawn from many, many sources, and had that sense of athleticism behind it. And again, from her roots in Oklahoma and Texas, it was very powerful. And everything was narrative. We had a story to tell. We had an opportunity of going over to Russia to perform in 1990. And when you go to Russia to dance, that's a scary thing, because it's like taking coal to Newcastle. You just don't dance in Russia. They're the best there are. Mm-hmm. But we didn't go there as dancers. We went there to share her vision, to share her story. And she was, in her choreography, she was such an ambassador of what we did with in the United States, our spirit, our sense of openness. And while people that we interviewed and talked to, they knew they weren't coming to see ballet, but they knew that they, after what they saw, there was a sense of freedom. And we finished a concert, and I was really kind of intimidated with a gentleman that sat on the front row with all of his many medals that he had on his chest. And I reached out at the end, because he brought up some flowers at the end of the stage, and I reached out and I took his hand, and we made eye contact, and we shook hands, and we smiled. And we had a moment there of, in 1990, before the opening, it was right in the middle of Glasnost, of person to person coming together through the arts. And Birch's choreography allowed that to happen. We saw that everywhere we went. And we performed there in a big event. It was called the White Nights Festival. Yeah.
So was there a... So she creates these pieces. Was there a signature piece that she had?
She had two or three. One of her main signature that you see a lot of that people relate to, it was called Unfenced Land, and we really kind of emulated the quality of mustangs and horses moving and dancing through the space. It was one of her more athletic pieces, but it was constant drive, And that's where people got the sense of openness. We also did a piece called Sunday Morning on Deep Creek, where it ended up into a revival of evangelical speaking in tongues, almost, choreography that was just so energetic. When we were performing in Riga, Latvia with that piece, the audience kept clapping in unison after that piece ended. And we realized they wanted us to perform it again because it was so, it's a powerful, powerful work of choreography. Well, we couldn't because we had to move on with the production, but it is really one of her signature pieces. It's quite the gem.
So you said that she creates a narrative with her dance. Is when you were learning that, when she said, I got something new for you, did she tell you the story behind it? I mean, did she tell you what that narrative is?
She would start and give us her ideas of what she had in mind, but she would allow us to develop our own character within that. Not a caricature, that'd be the worst thing. She would yell at us if we ever did that. It was developing a character that people could believe in that was unique to who I was as an artist on stage. That was what brought it together, that it wasn't a bunch of dancers dancing in unison, but that we found our place, similar to a play of the characters and who you are, unique to everyone else. And that was what was so much fun dancing for her, because she found each of our own strengths and then capitalized on those strengths, but saw us as individuals.
And yet was able to weave those individual notions into a cohesive
exactly.
piece.
Exactly.
So when you think about choreographers, or what I would envision someone like Birchman in the movies, right? It would be someone with a stick, just kind of like, yeah, you will do this. And is that how she was, or was she?
No. I mean, you know, she wasn't, she wasn't afraid to let us know that if we messed up, you know what I mean? Birch was never short on words. And one time we had performed, and she mentioned that her really good dancers, we're not with her after we finished performing. but anyway, you knew if you messed up. But she had this kind spirit behind her, too. And you wanted to do your very best for her.
So she has this company that tours the world and everything. And then obviously you have been a part of that company. How do you come into that picture? How do you join the company at Birchman?
Yeah, I was up at Utah State, and because of Jerry Sherritt, who was, again, we established our former president, he was in charge, he was vice president at Utah State University. And he was in charge of summer enrollment, and he hired Birch and her company to come in and do summer residencies at Utah State. And he created a production, it was called the Festival of the American West, to increase summer enrollment, and he wrote that pageant around Birch's choreography. So I stayed over the summers up there and studied with Birch, and it's not like any other opportunities. I mean, it allows you opportunities with when you're a dancer to study with the artist and the choreographer, because it's an in into their company if they feel that you can do the work. So having the opportunity to study with her first and then get into the company, and I was invited from that point.
So part of her reasoning for being there was also to look and to scout new talent to join her?
She did that regardless. I don't know if that was her objective. She did find Kay Anderson, my colleague here, that was also a faculty member here at SUU, who that's another story which we don't have time for, but he lived up in Petersburg, Utah, northern Utah, just outside of Logan, and he danced for Birch, and he's danced in every continent except Antarctica in his career as a performing artist.
So did Jerry Sherritt know Birchman, or did he just was, I mean, he was a Renaissance man himself, but did he see her and just say, I want to reach, I mean, how did that connection happen?
He saw the company perform several times and then reached out to Birch and said, I would like to commission your work for this pageant.
And so you then join her company, you graduate from Utah State, you travel the world as a member of Birchman's company. Has the name changed yet? Mm-mm. And then And then Jerry Sherratt leaves Utah State, comes to, at the time, it was the transition period, right? Mm-hmm. He was the first president of SUU, right? It was happening during that time. And then how does he get her back to here?
He moved her from Pasadena, California, and asked her to start a program under theater, a dance program under theater. There has always been a dance program prior to that run under physical education by Lviv Wetton, who established it. But he wanted it under theater, and Birch did that program. And so he brought her and her daughter, San, who assisted her, and they moved here. And a couple of her other company members joined and worked here in Cedar City, and several of the dancers finished their degrees here and danced for Birch. I wasn't here as a student. I had gone on with my husband and started my graduate studies and other things elsewhere. But yeah, she was here, living here in Cedar.
So he literally moved her here.
He literally moved her here, and she lived here till she passed away.
Was there pushback at the time from moving dance from PE, physical education, to theater?
It's a normal maturation that happens in the growth of the arts. Dance had had a nurturing relationship under PE for many years, because it's kind of one of those things that women were able to do that mm-hmm. was physical, and so they had that. But over the years, it found its place as a true art form, and it seemed to work really well with theater.
So she builds the dance program, but creates the more academic, rigorous dance program that we think of today.
She brought the technique and the style and the idea of training in dance, the artistry of dance. It wasn't really until I came here that it was the curriculum and the rigor of what it means to have a full curriculum of dance.
So then she was, I mean, the American Folk Ballet, and she's part of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how does that, what is that story?
Birch founded, that's her company. She started as a Birch Man Dancers and then changed to
the American Folk Ballet. Mm-hmm. So when you say, I mean, earlier you said that when you went to Russia, the Russians knew that they weren't going to see ballet.
Mm-hmm.
What did they know they were going to see?
They thought they were going to see bad ballet. That's what they thought. One woman had mentioned that in her interview. But they didn't know. It was just the unknown of what we were bringing. You know, Russia wasn't open. It was still very much a communist country at that time. And to be there and to be able to share Americana is what it was. You know, we did Appalachian clogging. And it was really first time they'd seen some things that they just really, really, really enjoyed.
So one of the strengths of Birch Man is that her music really crosses borders.
Yes, yes,
right?
It does.
In that way. So let's this is an amazing conversation about Birch Man, who is incredible. Let's pause for our next break. And this is one that you chose. It's the Cello Suite Number 1 in G Major by Bach, and this is performed by Yo-Yo Ma. But why did you choose this piece?
It is mental gymnastics, and it is choreography. I can't listen to Bach without seeing in my mind choreography. It just lends itself to the process of canons and changes and motion, and it just it's mental gymnastics and movement.
Okay, this is the Cello Suite Number 1 in G Major by Bach, performed by Yo-Yo Ma. Thank you.
Wow, I'm getting tongue-tied today. That was Cello Suite No. 1 in G Major by Johann Sebastian Bach. You are listening to the Apex Radio Hour here on KSUU Thunder 91.1. I'll turn it back to you, Ryan.
Thank you, Faith. So I want to talk about, you are obviously a brilliant educator and an academic and those kinds of things, but you're an artist. And I don't know if you would say that you're an artist first and foremost or an academic. What would you say?
I would say an artist first and foremost, because even as an academic, I feel like you use artistry. You know, you use the lessons that you learn of bringing choreography together, bringing people together, creating opportunities to find people's strengths, finding, you know, the whole process of what you learn in choreography and in artistry, I think, goes hand in hand with administration.
So what have been your experiences with choreography? I mean, do you remember the first time? Do you remember the best time?
You know, I've had some wonderful, wonderful opportunities at, you know, it depends on the genre. In theater, I've had some great opportunities. You know, I've worked at New Mexico State in their theater world, and a gentleman, his name was Mark Medoff, who was an outstanding original writer and Tony Award winning and Oscar winning director and writer. And he would set plays, new original, because he lived in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and I would be choreographing at the beginning of a play when it was being written. And so all of us artists were coming together. He was writing the script. Composers were writing the music. I was figuring out what the movement was to be done simultaneously as Mark would create these pieces. And that was just absolutely thrilling. Absolutely thrilling. And then choreographing on students. What a joy that has been. And choreographing here at SUU in theater productions, as well as productions for the dance program.
So do you find, for you, creativity is more of an internal, I like to do it by myself, or is it more of a collaborative process for you?
It's so collaborative for me. The initial, you know, again, it depends. If I'm going to be setting a work of choreography that I'm going to do for, say, a faculty concert, and it is my work, I'll go into some places internally and say, what do I want to say? And my kids would just laugh at me, and they say, oh, Mom's in that weird space again. She's doing, stop doing that, Mom, because I'd be kind of doing these weird things as my mind's thinking through what the next steps and what the next ideas are going to be. And then all of a sudden, it comes in a process. It never ends up what you thought it was going to be. And you let it evolve. The moment you try to force it into a right thing and don't allow your intuitive to have its moment and to speak to you, then you force it into a direction and that you probably doesn't want to go. So you have to be open. You have to be willing to go down certain roads and realize that each piece is its own creation.
So as an artist and as an educator, mm-hmm. do you think that creativity is something that's internal or innate, or do you think it's something that needs to be taught and nurtured?
I think it's both. I think that you need to, as an educator, create the environment to nurture it. But I do think that students have to allow themselves to go into those places where they find their own voice. I'm a little worried about AI right now, mm-hmm. that it's going to give people prompts that they don't go into those difficult moments where they say, what am I really going to create? Where you look into a dark abyss and say, what's my next project? When you get a prompt externally and that's what motivates you. You know, we have to hold on to our humanity. We have to hold on to our humanity. And I think that comes from that inner place. But it has to be nurtured, and it has to be cultivated. And that is through the process of giving students safe spaces and safe spaces to fail. You know, all of our students, they learn to fail. They fail miserably. And they learn how to take critique in front of everyone. It's not their paper that they take home and they look at and they get their individual A or B or whatever grade they get. Their critique is in front of every other student. So they learn how to process. They learn how to grow. They learn how to so you have to create a safe environment in an educational setting for students to thrive.
So do you think that the creativity, I mean, this is, again, the stereotype that creativity comes from some trauma, when you talk about the dark places or some, you know, emotional event, or does creativity also come from joy and happiness? And I mean, can I think about happy things and be creative?
Oh, you bet.
Or do
you
I always
can.
Need to think about the time that, you know, my dog got run over?
No, you can think about anything. Some of the greatest joy, yes, that can be an impetus for an idea. Absolutely.
Cool. Well, let's take our final break, again, by someone who we could argue be creative, a very early song by an artist we've already heard from, which is Billy Joel. And this song you chose is Vienna. So can you tell me about this, why you chose this song?
Well, I just thought it was a big enough contrast from his other ballads. Yeah, and just to provide contrast.
Okay, this is Vienna from Billy Joel.
Slow down, you crazy child. You're so ambitious for a juvenile. But then if you're so smart, tell me, why are you still so afraid? Where's the fire? What's the hurry about? You better cool it off before you burn it out. You got so much to do and only so many hours in a day. Hey, but you know that when the truth is told, that you can get what you want or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you? Slow down, you're doing fine. You can't be everything you wanna be before your time. Although it's so romantic on the borderline tonight, tonight. Too bad, but it's the life you lead. You're so ahead of yourself that you forgot what you need. Though you could see when you're wrong, you know you can't always see when you're right. You're right. You got your passion, you got your pride. But don't you know that only fools are satisfied? Dream on, but don't imagine they'll all come true. Ooh, when will you? Vienna waits for you. Slow down, you crazy child, and take the phone off the hook and disappear for a while. Can't afford to lose a day or two. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you? And you know that when the truth is told, that you can get what you want or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway. Don't you realize Vienna waits for you? When will you realize
Vienna waits for you.
That was Vienna by Billy Joel. You are listening to the Apex Radio Hour here on KSUU, Thunder 91.1. I'll turn it back to you, Ryan.
Thank you, Faith. We are here with Dean Shauna Mandini, the Dean of the College and Performing Visual Arts here at SUU. And we are here at the last segment. Those of you who've listened to us before know what this next question is. So first, I'm going to thank you, Dean, for being here and all you have done and will continue to do for this community and for the university and for our students. But here's the question. Shauna Mandini, what are you currently watching, reading, listening to, or playing that is bringing you joy?
Okay. Well, this time of the year, at the end of a semester, when I'm a dean of a college of performing and visual arts, I'm not really having too much time to do this on my own. I'm at our students' performances. Last night I saw Carmen. What a great feat. Wonderful, wonderful voices. Outstanding production. Everybody should get to that. It's at the Heritage Theater. Also, I'll be seeing our Wind Symphony coming up. I will be seeing the opportunity to see our ballroom dance perform next weekend. I'll be seeing two new productions coming up with our theater department. So those are what I'm doing right now. I'm celebrating student work. I'm celebrating their time on stage. And then I'm also seeing the students in SUMA. We have a BFA showcase going on that is the top of the student work, of the culmination of all of their years here at Southern Utah University, and showing it in their exhibition. So that's what I've been doing.
And that's just bringing you joy.
That's well bringing done. Me joy.
Well done. Faith Christensen, what are you currently watching, reading, listening to, or playing that is bringing you joy?
Well, I have a thought with that, and maybe we should add to the question creating. Mm. So it'd make the question a whole lot longer. But yesterday, my husband and I went on a cute little date, and the idea I had was, why don't we paint something together? And my husband's more of an artist than I am. I am an artist, I will admit, but he's a little more skilled and more technical. But what we had selected was a wooden frame with glass in the middle. And the idea was we would paint our palms and then overlap them. So he chose white to put his painted palm on the glass, and then we did lighter gray for mine. And so the beautiful thing of that is we later, this is not an announcement, but when we have children, then we can add our children's prints to that same piece that we created. So that just made me really happy, and then I can continue to build upon that creation. So heads up, Ryan, there's another thing to add to the question. But speaking of, what are you currently watching, reading, listening to, creating, or playing that is bringing you joy?
Well, mine's not as selfless as both of yours. But I'm a child of the 70s, and I discovered through here, and by the way, there's just someone walking out with a Sun Records t-shirt on, which is amazing, and Sun Records is a whole port of creativity. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I am watching a streaming channel on our Roku called Comic Book Nerds, N-E-R-D-Z, and what it has is all kinds of comic bookish shows from the 70s and 80s. So it's like there's a whole part of live action, so Knight Rider and the Incredible Hulk and Wonder Woman with Linda Carter. There's a whole section dedicated to the Super Friends, one to the Hanna-Barbera cartoons, Johnny Quest and others, G.I. Joe, Transformers, all of these things that I grew up with. And I'll just sit there at night and just it's a way for me to think of my childhood. And that's what's bringing me joy.
I love that.
Yeah, you should look at it. Comic Book Nerds. Scooby-Doo. There's a whole channel on Scooby-Doo and Batman. I don't know how they do it, quite frankly. But it's cool. So with that, we would like to thank you, Dean Mandini, Shauna Mandini, mm-hmm. for being here. Faith, this is your last show with us, yes. as well as you're becoming an adult and adulting. Thank you for all you've done this semester. And we're going to go out with an amazing song you chose by the Eagles called Hotel California.
Yeah, I love artists that go across generations, and this is one of those artists that you can close the window and the whole family can sing together. So it's great.
Thank you. Again, thank you all for listening to the Apex Radio Hour. This is Hotel California by the Eagles.
They stab it with their stealing eyes, but they just can't.